Last night, Hall of Fame has come and gone. Only one gets in. Big Papi, David Ortiz. We'll have our full reaction next on Locked On Brewers.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into a Wednesday edition of Locked On Brewers. Thanks for making us your first listen of the day. I'm Dominic Cotroneo, minor league play-by-play guy turned statistician. I'm joined, as always, by Vinny Rattino, former big league player, now turned broadcaster. And you are currently out on location, so audio is going to sound a little bit different today. Vinny, can you tell us where you're calling in from?
Yeah, I'm out on the road for work. We're actually visiting my wife's sister's family. So we're just kind of two birds with one stone. We're out in Connecticut here. So bear with the audio quality here. And I am in a hotel lobby. So if you hear some lobby music, that's what that is.
Somebody should order pizza and have it just come handed straight to you, like straight out of the minor league days delivery.
It might happen.
All right, so Hall of Fame, we just wanted to jump on and get our immediate reactions to the election from, well, if you're listening to tonight, you know, Tuesday night, or last night if you're listening on Wednesday. First and foremost, only one guy gets in, David Ortiz. Congratulations to Big Papi. The resume speaks for itself. It's absolutely insane. And especially, I was looking at his last year again, Vinny. It was absolutely bonkers. But hey, three-time World Series champ, 10-time All-Star, 7-time Silver Slugger. He actually never won a regular season MVP, but he won both a CS and a World Series MVP. Career 541 homers, 632 doubles, over 1,700 RBIs, a career 286 hitter, a career 552 slugging. I mean, the metrics are there. And his last year, he hit 48 homers to lead baseball, and he also had a 1021 OPS. This dude's a Hall of Famer. And we'll get into the steroids in a little bit, but it's Big Papi, man. He's synonymous with Boston and with that run. I'm happy for Big Papi.
I'm totally in agreement with you. And the fact that what's cool about this whole story with Big Papi is the fact that this guy was a Minnesota Twin to start with, and he was just kind of let go, right? And he was traded from the Mariners to the Twins. It's kind of a throw-in. I love stories like this, and then guys turn out and develop into Hall of Famers and MVP type caliber players. It's such a cool story. I'm interested to hear your take on the rest of it, because the internet is kind of breaking right now with what's going on with everything. But I'll let you kind of handle the when we talk about that. So go ahead.
So basically, the big frustration of all of this is that, of course, Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, it was their final year on the ballot. They had the best chance of the so-called steroid era to make it into the Hall from the traditional Baseball Writers Association of America way to get into the Hall of Fame. They both fell short. The numbers this year, they fell short by 36 and 39 votes for Bonds and Clemens, respectively. So, again, this is the outdatedness and the difficulty, to be fair, of how it is to get into the Hall of Fame, that you need 75%. Both of these guys attained more than 60% of the vote. Both these guys had more than the majority, and they still don't get in. This is what's so hard about getting into baseball's Hall of Fame, and it's really disappointing to me that, especially a guy like Barry Bonds specifically, that it's been shown that, first of all, technically never failed the test. I just want to make that clear, 100% clear. He never failed the test, as did Roger Clemens. And all the court cases that you heard about with perjury in line of Congress, they were acquitted on all charges, okay? So the point is that allegedly he started after the 1998 season. And prior to 1998, Barry Bonds was the only member, and still is, the only member of the 400 homer and 400 stolen base club before the alleged Balco use and everything that went down. I'm just appalled that enough people couldn't see past that. Roger Clemens, 7 Cy Youngs. Like, it's so disappointing to me, because I get steroids is really, really hard for some people to look past, but specifically with Roger and specifically with Barry, and even go back to McGuire, they technically weren't breaking rules in their era. You know, it was widespread, it was not regulated, and there are guys in the Hall of Fame that have alleged PED use that, you know, obviously got a pass to get through it. So that's just my thought when it comes to the steroid stuff. And now with David Ortiz getting in, who technically on an anonymous test in 2002 allegedly failed it, but to be fair, it was never released what he actually failed for. And it was a very, very shady thing. It was a voluntary test that he tested positive for, but no one knows exactly what he tested positive for. So I talked for a while there. It just really hurts me that a museum is ignoring part of its history. That's where it comes down to for me.
So for me, I think the Barry Bonds thing is this. And Roger Clemens. They are both before when you can... So you can speculate all day, and we all do, right? Let's just not pull any punches. We all speculate when guys started to use, or if they were using their entire career, or, you know, we all do it. We're human beings. I don't think Barry Bonds was doing them before 1998. And he was a Hall of Famer right there. Right then and there, he was one of the best players for two decades, and he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. I think he was one of the few guys that wasn't doing them in that era. Right. And so then Roger Clemens, I would speculate he probably wasn't doing them before. I think, again, I'm speculating here, but I think he started to do them towards the end of his career to prolong his career. He did get really good, though, in that stretch as well. However, these are two of the best players that have ever played the game in an era where a lot of guys were doing them. They weren't friendly to the media. I get that part. I don't know if that's the integrity vote, whatever the integrity criteria that is factored in. My take is both need to be in. They just do. And I don't know. I don't know how guys are voting to keep these guys out. I'm in total agreement with you. I get it. We're not voting on the best human being. Well, I guess that is part of the criteria with the integrity part, but these guys were special players, and they deserve to be memorialized really in the Hall of Fame.
I agree. And another guy that I'm disappointed doesn't get in this route is Curt Schilling. Look, I get it. We all have that friend that's a jerk. And you know, like, man, this guy's not a role model, or really says some stupid stuff and doesn't agree with everything you say. And the dude straight up has no filter. And it's his most fatal flaw, given he was just a flat-out jerk after he finished playing. None of this stuff came out while he was playing, too. But for Schilling, he basically said, take me off the ballot. I don't even want to be on it on his 10th year, when he probably would have got in this year if he didn't say that last year, because he only came a handful of votes shy in 2020, so then, or 2021, and then this year he says, nope, just take me off the ballot. He was technically kept back on, and Ryder said, fine, we won't vote for you. So I think that's really disappointing as well, that he falls from 71% to 59%. So he's out. But before I tell guys and tell folks listening how they can get back into the Hall of Fame, there is one more route that they can get into. But before we tell you about that route through the Eras committees, I want to tell you about Built Bar, of course. In the new year here, in the new resolution, you can get a snack. I know you've been traveling a lot, Vinny. Built Bar would be a perfect snack for you right now. 130 calories, 4 grams sugar, 4 grams of carbs, 17 grams of protein. I mean, the list goes on. It's 100% real chocolate. It actually tastes great. Tastes like a candy bar. It tastes worth it. And it's got so many flavors. Coconut almond, peanut butter brownie, raspberry, cookies and cream, salted caramel. The list goes on. They've got so many new and innovative ways that you can enjoy Built's products. Even if you're not a huge fan of working out, you can at least treat yourself to something that tastes good and something that's good for you. So that way you can enjoy a delicious Built bar. Use the promo code LOCKED15, LOCKED15, and you're going to get a 15% off welcome at Built.com. So, Vinny, there is another way for these guys to get in, okay? So this is something that a lot of folks are a little confused about. It's the AKA the Veterans Committee. And Brewers fans should know a lot about this, because it's how Ted Simmons got into the Hall of Fame last year. Of Simba, he got in thanks to what's called the modern baseball era. So there's four different committees that are assigned four different eras that meet semi-annually, or biannually, I should say, depending on the era. So these three guys, Schilling, Bonds, and Clemens, now that they're off their 10 years of the ballot, you're only eligible after 10 years, that they're off the ballot from the Baseball Writers Association, can be recommended by this committee. It's only 10 to 12 people generally. That includes executives, media, and former players. So it's a very interesting stirred pot that you also need to get 75% of their vote. So if there's only 12 people voting, you still need to get 8 out of 12, which is arguably harder. So there is a way for these guys to get in. It's what's called the modern Today's Game Committee. Sorry. So the Today's Game Committee covers baseball from 1988 to today's game. So these guys both fall into this category. And in fact, they will vote next year. There's two votes every 5 years for the Today Committee. There's two votes every 5 years for the Modern Baseball Committee, which that runs from 1970 to 1987. That's how Simba got in last year. And then further back, you've got the Golden Era, which is from 1950 to 1969. They only vote on that once every 5 years. And lastly, the early baseball period, which is anything before 1950, they only vote on that once every 10 years. That's how guys like Buck O'Neill and Gil Hodges get in this year. So that's a quick little look at how it works. Basically, next year, they will be right back on a chance to get onto the ballot and be voted in by the today's baseball committee. So my fingers are crossed on that, but I just want your opinion too. As a former player, let's say you're hypothetically on this, you know, committee, would it be harder for you to, you know, to say you competed against a guy like this who allegedly, you know, took PEDs, and or even a guy like Schilling who is known to be a jerk and things like that, to give them a chance one more time?
I don't think these guys are going to get in now because of this new voting system that they're implementing, where they can now get in after they're off the ballot. Why are they going to change their vote at this point? I can see guys that have gotten in, like Ted Simmons, because I think writers have understood that the data and the analytics have shown and made a very strong case for why these guys were the best at their positions, or one of the best players in their era at the time that they played. So like Ted Simmons certainly deserved to be in the Hall of Fame. Not sure why he was off in the first place, but the data analytics, the new technology, all that stuff has kind of helped the writers understand that he should have been in. So I don't see any new evidence for these guys, for the writers to put these guys in. I guess it depends on who this committee is, made up of 16 guys. Maybe all 16 have voted both these guys in these past.
Right. It's not just writers, to be fair, in these Hall of Fame committees that help after the fact that they fall off. So there's, like I said, there's execs, there's media members, not necessarily just writers, like Tim Kirkjian used to serve on it, and Pedro Gomez used to serve on it. It depends on what era you are assigned to. And then you've got executives and things like that. So that's how that works.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. So I can't imagine, but I still can't imagine that they're going to get in at this point. So,
yeah, it's very disappointing, quite frankly, in my opinion. We can sit here and, you know, scream to the cows home about, oh my gosh, these guys should be in the Hall of Fame. But, you know, just kind of get in line. It sucks. We just kind of wanted to get that off our chests. But to shift gears, talking about, you know, Prince Fielder's now off the ballot, which we saw coming in our preview episode on Monday. I thought this was interesting that Gary Sheffield had the exact same vote number as the year prior, 40.6%. Next year will be his ninth year on the ballot, so he's technically got two more years. And on Monday's pod, we talked about how crowded this ballot is. So now, all of a sudden, you have Curt Schilling falling off, Sammy Sosa falling off, Barry Bonds falling off, and also Roger Clemens falling off. So boom, that's four guys that a lot of people voted for this year. In fact, the majority of the voting base voted for, that now have room to maybe have a guy like Gary Sheffield put on their ballot. And this is what we're talking about. A guy like Gary Sheffield, or a guy like Scott Rolen, who had the biggest jump of anybody this year. He gained over 12% as opposed to year over year. So Scott Rolen looks like he's going to get in, as Rolen jumped all the way to 63%. You need 75. And then some other guys that, you know, are going to hang around on the ballot. I've got Todd Helton. He's at 52%. He gained by 7 points. Andrew Jones gained by 7 points. He's now at 41%. But I'm super disappointed by Jeff Kent. I can't believe Jeff Kent stayed exactly the same, or practically the same, at 32%. It's really weird, but going back to all of this, it's a crowded ballot, and it's a very puzzling second half from the headliners, you know? It's very interesting to see how many guys and gals prioritized their votes, whether it was the alleged PED users versus everything else. I just found it very odd of how hard it is to divvy up these votes.
Yeah, you almost, you know, I know that the writers post their, they post their ballots. A lot of them do, right? They post them on Twitter. Yes. I'm appreciative of that. I'm curious, how many of them actually post their reasonings for their votes?
Well, it's like clickbait these days, right? Where you have to have a column included with, hey, here's why I voted, or this, that, and the other. Like, Dan Shaughnessy of the Boston Globe decided not to vote for David Ortiz. He was the only one at the Globe who didn't vote for Ortiz, and he wrote a column about why he didn't, and, you know, interaction, boom, clicks, whatever. Dan Shaughnessy, you know, he's written, you know, very fairly and unfairly at times. He's a stalwart in the Boston market. For him to not vote Big Poppy, I encourage folks to read his column. I struggle with his reasoning, but I get it. It's such a hard system to figure out of how to vote, you know, and how to divvy up. You only get a maximum of 10 votes.
Yeah, and the idea is it's super subjective. And I guess baseball's been that way for a long, long time. I know scouting and who gets at bats has been a subjective thing for a long time. Who gets a chance in the big leagues has been a subjective thing for a long, 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 long time, right? So it's the idea that people in the front office, your managers give you a chance to play because they think you can play. Same thing now here is what's happening with the voters. It's who do they think deserves to be in the Hall of Fame? Obviously, there's obvious criteria, right? You have to be one of the best players numbers-wise in your era. You wonder if there's just some sort of objective way that you can add to this system, because I agree, it is a little bit of a puzzling system. And you had to explain it to me last podcast exactly how it all worked, or two podcasts ago on our mailbag. So, it's a puzzling system. You like to hear some of the reasoning, maybe put these guys on a podcast and have them go at it and argue about it. I don't know. That would be certainly clickbait and entertaining for us, but I'm with you. I don't get Jeff Kent. Gary Sheffield should probably be in at some point, but there's also speculation around him. So I don't know. You can pose questions about all these guys. And I'm scratching my head at the whole thing. I got to be honest.
Yeah, it's very odd. And I'll make it a little more complicated after we talk about BetOnline. BetOnline, of course, the number one spot for all your sports wagering in 2022. It's a new year and a new desktop and mobile site. So you can sign up today and you're going to get a 50% welcome bonus at BetOnline when on your first deposit. So you use the promo code LOCKEDON to get a 50% welcome on your first deposit at BetOnline. They've got football, of course, championship weekend this weekend, basketball, hockey, boxing, UFC, your favorite Vegas casino games. They've got it all right there. Don't wait. Take advantage of all their amazing offers here at the start of 2022. BetOnline is the easiest and fastest way to wager on all your favorite sports. BetOnline is where the game starts. As we wrap up the episode here, just a couple quick points. I want to get to the question that was asked to us on Twitter a little bit ago, right before we started recording, asking how the ballot is actually filled out. We explained that briefly on Monday, but basically there is a committee assigned by the Baseball Writers Association of America every winter meetings, and they go through the list of the guys that become first-year candidates. So we talked about the fact that, hey, enough folks on that committee felt that A.J. Pierzynski deserved to be on this ballot, even though you and I both know there was no chance he was going to be a Hall of Famer, just like Jake Peavy and guys like that. So that's how that happens. I encourage you to listen to Monday's episode for a little deeper dive into that explainer. But I just want to clarify something about the Baseball Hall of Fame. The Baseball Hall of Fame has shot itself in the foot for the last 7 years, and here's why. You remember in 2014 when Dan Le Batard gave away his vote? Do you remember that? So he gave it to Deadspin.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I do remember.
It was very controversial that after the fact that, you know, oh my gosh, you gave your vote away. How could you do that? He said, well, I hate the system. I think it doesn't make any sense. And that following year, not only did they make it a penalty and take his vote away for you to, you know, quote unquote, sell off your vote in essence, you know, hey, let somebody else vote for me, you know, trade it off. They also very quietly changed the rule as opposed to 20 years from retirement maximum to 15 years from retirement maximum, which is, in essence, the 10 years on the ballot. Because you can only be eligible on the ballot after 5 years of being retired. So then if you only get 10 years to be on the ballot as opposed to the previous 15, that impacts a lot of people. And to announce that ahead of the 2015 election, which was year 4 of these guys, of Barry Bonds, of Roger Clemens, of Sammy Sosa, the Hall of Fame was making it clear they were trying to get over this as fast as possible. And I think that's not right, especially given that the previous rule of 15 years had been around, since 1962. Like, it's been over 50 years. It's clear that they were just trying to rush through it. And Harold Reynolds made this point a lot on the show from MLB Networks. Like, these guys, I think, would get in if it was a 15-year ballot. And I personally 100% agree. I don't know about you.
I 100% agree as well. Which specific players were they talking? That impacted
Bonds. Well, I'm just saying it happens in the middle of their eligibility, which is quite frankly, you know, as opposed to saying, all right, well, they've got five more years and they're at 66% of the vote right now. They've got a really good chance. Whereas instead, they're now off the ballot, which, you know, to have that happen in the middle of your candidacy, I think is ludicrous.
No, I 100% agree. Yeah, I mean, it is a very – look, you know a lot more about this than I do. You're educating me on it, honestly, Dom, and I agree. It's an antiquated system. I don't know what you do about the system because now you have a bunch of players – you have a Hall of Fame now that's the history of the game, and that's how it's been voted on for a century, essentially. So now what do you do? Now that you know the system is broken, I guess you can change the system now, but what happens – like you said, in the last 7 years, the system has been broken. How do you rectify it and go backwards? I don't know, but make very compelling points here.
And my last 2 points here, that the Baseball Writers Association actually in 2016 voted within their ranks to make their ballots mandatory public. 80 to 9, they voted in favor of making ballots public mandatory for the Hall of Fame voting. Because remember, every other vote that the Baseball Writers Association votes on, MVP, Cy Young, Rookie of the Year, that is 100% public. You cannot have an anonymous vote. So they approved it, presented it to the Hall of Fame, and Hall of Fame said, nah, we're good. We don't need to do that. Protecting the ones that don't want to make it public, which it's your responsibility. And I think a lot of writers take it very, very seriously. I'm not generalizing here. But there are some that get away with a lot. Like we hear every year, somebody submits a blank ballot. Like I that stuff frustrates me. It just really, really grinds my gears with that. And the fact that we have to play gatekeeper here in 2022 about these guys allegedly using performance enhancers when there are much, much worse moral grounding for current players in the Hall of Fame, guys like Ty Cobb, or guys that used greenies, which is an amphetamine, which is currently illegal in Major League Baseball. You've also got, you know, Babe Ruth was practically a drunk, you know, and we let give him the pass because he was the Sultan of SWAT. I'm rambling on here because I'm so frustrated that the Hall of Fame tries to act like every single person in there is perfect. There are plenty of flaws on those plaques, and I truly believe Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens should be in.
Yep, I 100% agree. These guys are the best two players. Look, if you put a top 10 list of who are the most top 10 most talented players at their position players, top 10 most talented position players, top 10 most talented pitchers of all time, these two would be on both those lists for me. So they're not in the Hall. So there's that. So I agree.
Yeah, it's crazy. We've talked enough. This was a lot. We just wanted to hop on. Get our thoughts. A little happier episode coming tomorrow, right, Vinny, with Throwback Thursday?
It really is, yeah. Yeah, that'll be a happier episode. This was Dom getting – I love your soapbox, though, Dom. I got to be honest. I'm not that important. No, I really do. You give some really good takes and points, and you're very educated about the Hall of Fame system, and I don't think a lot of fans are. I'm not. I'm now more educated on it, and so I appreciate that. So – thank you, Dom. But
I appreciate
it. It really is. It's, and I'm glad that you're so passionate about it. I'm passionate about it too, but because it's the history of the game that we love so much. And so we want to make sure that the system of, immortalizing, it's not memorializing. That's what I said before. It's immortalizing.
Right. Immortalize. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, forever, these guys are going to be, there's going to be a statue, a monument there in the Hall of Fame. So we got to get it right.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And thanks for saying passionate, because I love this game so freaking much, and I try to spread that love, and when it doesn't love us back, I get really frustrated. So that's my stance on that. Thanks for listening. Thanks for making us your first listen of the day. Hall of Fame Reaction Podcast tomorrow. We continue with the Throwback Thursday series, our top 20 games of 2021. Tomorrow's a really good one. A game that you may have forgotten about from the first half of the year, and then an obvious one, the second best pitching performance of the year. You know exactly what I'm talking about. But for Vinny Rattino, I'm Dominic Catronio. Thanks so much for listening. And hey, maybe a CBAX episode coming up too. There's progress happening, Vinny. Good things are happening in baseball. We're going to get back to the positivity, I promise.
I saw that. Yeah. Yes, we will. Thanks for
joining. Okay. Thanks for listening, everyone.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.